Good morning, my happy little ramblers, and welcome to Rhys Rambles episode number 59 for the Easter weekend. And indeed, it's Good Friday as I'm recording this, and I'm literally the only person at this office complex where my studio is today. It's gloriously bright and sunny outside, and it's actually quite warm for a change, which has been quite nice after all the rain and horrible stuff that we've had over the past few weeks. And I'm sat in here with all the curtains drawn and all my studio lights glaring at my face, producing content like a good little content creator. But no, of course, I wouldn't be here if I didn't love it. And I'll have plenty of time to enjoy my time off over the weekend. And I also have an afternoon of recording ahead of me as well, if all goes to plan, because yesterday, and I'll just talk a little bit about this, that this is kind of this is going to be an upcoming video, which will hopefully be out next week on my channel. I know, 2 weeks in a row, what am I thinking? But yesterday I found myself in Birmingham, of all places, picking up a very strange item of PC hardware, which is actually, it's actually behind me. I'm not going to show you like I usually do, because I kind of want to keep this one secret. Although if you're, maybe a little peek of it there. But if you're a regular on my Discord server, you'll know the story of how I've kind of been to collect this thing and everything else. But I won't spoil it for everyone else if you don't want to know, if you want to keep it all a surprise. And this video is going to be a little bit different, because I basically discovered that I had to go and rescue this thing at very short notice, because the building that it was in was being demolished, and it was basically going to be demolished along with the building if someone didn't go and rescue it. And it was ridiculously cheap, and it was only an hour away from where I live. So I thought, well, I'll take half the day off from my day job. A bit quiet anyway with the wind down for Easter and all that stuff. And pop over and pick it up. So I filmed all of that, filmed the collection. I've done some vlog style driving footage and stuff like that. So a little bit different content for my channel, but really, really enjoyed kind of exploring this thing and showing all of that in first person and seeing if it works and maybe if I can do something a bit interesting with it. Not a piece of hardware I'd come across before. It kind of makes sense that it exists, but the person I bought it from has no idea what it was used for. I have some ideas about what they could be used for, but Googling has turned up absolutely nothing about this specific model of it, or indeed any hardware kind of similar to it. So it's an odd one. It's a very strange thing, and I've had so much fun playing with it, and I'm really, really keen to share this. Hence, I'm here recording this afternoon on that video. But anyway, enough about the upcoming video. I always say too much in these things. I always end up spoiling things. I know people appreciate the behind-the-scenes stuff. But let's talk about a video that was released this week, as I always do. And of course, that was the PC9821 Part 2. So the story behind this, back in January, let's start right at the beginning, shall we? So last summer, I bought an NEC PC9821 on one of the Japanese auction sites. And I thought that this thing, it's part of the NEC PC98 range, of course, but I thought that this thing was just a bog-standard IBM-compatible PC with a few spicy bits in it just to add some compatibility with those kind of previous PC98 machines. Of course, a legendary range of computers, exclusive. I hate using words like exclusive. They did sell a few outside of Japan, but let's face it, it's pretty much a Japanese thing. And I did this video back in January, just covering the restoration that I did last summer, and just taking a poke around the machine and talking about the history of the PC98 and its forerunner, the PC88. Don't be fooled by the names. These machines were released in like 1981 and 1983, respectively. The numbers aren't connected to the release years or anything like that. But yeah, I thought this thing was just a bog standard PC, and I'd kind of made the video with that in mind, and then I got corrected by a few people. I took the video down, re-edited it ever so slightly just to take those references out, put up an apology video, which was only up very shortly just for the people that kind of watched the early release, and then took that down. And in the time since then, I've just been playing with this thing, trying to get it working. And trying to sort of just explore it and see what it's all about. And I do mention in part two, I had a lot of help from the Pirate Gamer Boy 12, who's been incredibly helpful. We've had loads of emails back and forth, and he also sent me a disk image called Yaddy, or yet another hard disk image, which I've got up and running on there. A few compatibility issues, I think, just with my specific machine. Probably me not understanding the machine, and I mean, a lot of issues that I've come across, and you'll see if you've seen the video, are a direct result of me not understanding the PC98 and how it all works. But yeah, by and large, it got a load of interesting stuff up and running. Played a load of games on it, and I thought, well, I'll put out an update video. Not really the video I kind of wanted to make. Neither of the two videos that I've made on this machine so far have been... I want it to be like the ultimate kind of PC 98 video, and I want to show everything that it can do. And I think that's what I'm building towards with this series. But for now, I think I'm just going to take people along on the journey, on the learning journey, and then we'll do kind of a bit of a big recap summary type thing at the end. So that's been a lot of fun. Still a few issues to iron out, and I have had more emails off the back of that video with some really useful advice, so thank you ever so much for that. And really looking forward to kind of getting stuck back into that. But I am kind of juggling it with this other thing now, because I'm quite keen to get this out quite quickly, just as a bit of a distraction, because it's... This mid-90s PC stuff is very much in my comfort zone. But we'll have a look at how the part two video has done. I'm sure if you're watching this on YouTube, you've been sat looking at the stats rather than my face. But I'll just go over it with a bit of insight maybe, and also for the benefit of the audio listeners, of course. So 2,900 views, and this video was released. It was around this time yesterday. In fact, it may have been a bit later. Yeah, it was 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So it's not quite been 24 hours yet, and it's had 3,000 views. So that's fantastic. That's really good. I think it's sitting at maybe number two or three, I think last time I looked, in my sort of last 10 releases for popularity. So really popular machine, and lots of people looking forward to seeing how I got on with this. I've gained 16 new subscribers off the back of this video, which is cool. It's always good to have stuff that grows the channel. And it actually says here, this video has got 2,910 views, which is similar to the 2,000 to 3,500 that your videos usually get. So obviously it's at the upper end of that. It was well above the curve for the first sort of the first 12 hours or so, and it's kind of settled down a bit now. So I don't know if it'll get a second win, but just pleased to have it out there, you know, and just kind of share a bit of information about this. So it's been shoved in front of 27,700 people, it's 5.4% of those people have clicked on it. Bearing in mind also, it's kind of holiday season as well here in the UK. I'm sure it's the same everywhere else, school holidays and stuff, so people perhaps saving it for later, maybe. But yeah, some great stats. I'm really pleased with the way that one has gone. And just as a little bit of a wrap up, just to talk about some other stuff before I get into a bit of news and a bit of other stuff. Let's talk about some games that I've been playing this week. Now, regular viewers and listeners will know that my recent gaming history from kind of December onwards has been rather eclectic and has had some rather interesting twists and turns. I can't remember exactly what I've been playing over the past 6 months, but I did play Talos Principle 2 and I absolutely loved it, and I raved about that for weeks on end, and you all humoured me on that, so thank you ever so much for listening. Don't know if any of you actually played it. I didn't have any comments from people saying, oh yeah, I bought it and I love it and it's great. But you should play it. It's great. Although I appreciate with the weather getting much better that people probably got better things to do. But yeah, I've been playing some of the Night Dive remasters. Of course, I played Doom 64. I still do kind of play the odd level of that here and there when I've got a few minutes and just kind of want to pick it up again. Enjoying that a lot. I played the Quake 2 remaster. I can't remember if that was this year or I think that was towards the end of last year. And, yeah, of course, there was the Tomb Raider debacle, shall we say, where I basically moaned about it for a few weeks and moaned about the controls, and people got fed up of hearing about that, and then I gave up and stopped playing it. I will go back to it, I promise. I will go back to playing Tomb Raider. But, of course, the big release of the year for me has been Dark Forces, one of my favourite games from the 90s. And, of course, remastered very ably by Night Dive. And I'm very pleased to say that I've completed it this week. So, of course, this is the first-person shooter that's based in the kind of the Star Wars universe. I must say, I'm not... obviously, I appreciate Star Wars, and I've seen kind of the main movies, the original ones, and, like, the whatever, the episodes 1, 2. Let's not get into it, okay? Let's just say that I'm not one of these crazy Star Wars fans, but this is a very, very solid FPS, and it came out around the time when I was really, really into these kind of 90s shooters. Loved it to death back in the day, and the remaster has been fantastic. I was really, really, really impressed with this. I did raise a few initial concerns. I think I'd had some ideas planted in my head based on some of the reviews and things that I'd seen when I first started playing this. Stuff about the music, Yes, the music is kind of a bit odd. There's obviously Dark Forces has this iMuse system where the music kind of evolves and adapts based on the actual action that's happening in the game. And Night Dive did talk about how they had some trouble integrating it into their engine. And I actually found quite a good fix for that, which was just to turn the volume down a bit. So, yeah, by default, the sound effects are set on 85, I think, and the music's set on 100. And I just swapped those two numbers over. And so, for me, the music was kind of always going on in the background. And, you know, the predominant audio experience was explosions and lasers and robots and all that cool stuff. Because, I mean, all the sound effects in this are awesome as well. And then, you know, you don't focus so much on the music. And it does kind of add to the experience. So, good tip there. Although apparently they are working on fixing it. And I know there are some people out there who are kind of waiting on a few little fixes before they play the game, and that's absolutely fair enough, but I'm glad that I got through it. Just some other thoughts on Dark Forces, I guess, before we move on. You know, controls great, plays great. The level design is odd. It's inconsistent, and in some places it's incredibly torturous and overcomplicated for no apparent reason, which of course is a very well-known kind of observation about this game. But yeah, you get levels that take hours to work out, and then you'll get one that's just like a bog standard sort of corridor shooter, blast your way through it in 10 minutes kind of level. It's quite inconsistent. And of course, there's the lives system. You start each level with a certain number of lives. I think that varies depending on what difficulty level you're playing it on. No saves, but there is a checkpoint system, and there are very regular checkpoints as you go through. And you can collect extra lives as well. But if you run out of lives, you have to start the level all over again. And I actually really enjoyed that aspect of the game. It's one that kind of, I don't know if, you know, when I was playing it as a kid, maybe I was playing it on kind of easier difficulty levels, or maybe I was using the cheats, maybe. But, you know, playing it again through properly as an adult on hard, I actually really appreciate just kind of having to learn the levels, and, you know, that you do fail it. You do fail a few times and have to go back and kind of revisit them and retry them over and over again. And just learning where everything is, and it's interesting as an FPS experience, rather than the constant saving. You know, you get to a big room full of enemies and you go, ooh, you know, and you quick save, and then obviously you'll get killed 10 times in a row, but just instantly quick load and carry on. I'm guilty of that myself. I don't have a huge amount of time for playing games, but I thought the pace was very different, and I do love this game. It's got some interesting ideas as far as FPS is to go, and of course the gameplay itself is very, very solid. So yeah, I've completed that. End boss was just as rubbish as I remembered from back in the day, but I won't spoil that. Let's just say that it's an incredible level with some great twists and turns. It took me ages to get through, loads of really sort of high level baddies, and then you get to the final boss and it's just, yeah. So I, of course, have had to pick up another game just to fiddle with in the evenings, although I really haven't had much time because I've been here most of the time working on video stuff. And that game is Thunder Helix. And I'm just showing you some footage here from Neil's review from RMC. And he got access, like a preview copy of the game before it was on early access. So this is on early access on Steam at the moment. And this is based on some of those, it's kind of inspired by some of those early DOS helicopter games. It's like 3D, you know, very, very kind of low poly 3D, early DOS 3D game kind of look to it. I'm not selling this game very well, but hopefully if you're watching this on YouTube, you can see the footage of what it looks like. And I've started playing it, and I've been following this project on Twitter for a very, very long time now, since the guy was sort of first playing with engine stuff and all of that. And I decided very early on that I was going to buy this, but kind of a big part of that being that I just like the guy. You know, he was really kind of open and engaging and stuff, and just evidently very passionate about this project. This RMC video, I will link to this because there is actually an interview with the developer of the game as well, which is quite interesting. And it's just, it's on early access. The whole game is 18 megabytes. I mean, it's not like one of these Unity games where you've got to download, you know, 2 gigs worth of stuff just to play something that looks like an early 90s DOS game. Because as far as I know, I think he actually wrote the whole engine himself from scratch in the end, because couldn't find anything that quite worked. And it's, I mean, the controls are super smooth. it's how you kind of remember these games looking, but not necessarily how they were back in the day. So it's super smooth, you know, nice high FPS, and you know, really sort of tight, really good controls that feel great. There's the one mission on the early access version, and I believe there's an update coming very, very soon that adds some nice sort of quality of life stuff and a second mission. So that'll be fun to check out. But yeah, just having loads of fun just flying around in a helicopter and shooting at stuff like you did back in the day, you know? So that's what I'm playing at the moment. And yeah, just enjoying it a lot. So I will link that in the usual places, as well as, of course, all the other stuff that I talk about in the video. But just wanted to give it a bit of a shout out because I'm enjoying playing that at the moment. Oops, looks like my Elgato Cam Link that I used to link my camera to my computer and record this froze up during that last section, so apologies if you had to stare at my face in a weird position, but I'm not going to bother re-recording that because I've got loads of stuff to get on with, and I want to get straight on to the next thing. And yeah, I'm going to talk about something else that I did. Obviously, last week's ramble was all about my weekend in London for my birthday, and the weekend after that, we did something quite different, but also still very me. And we went up to Birmingham. And yeah, I know, my life seems to revolve around Birmingham at the moment for some reason. But yeah, we went to see a band, but not playing music live, if that makes sense. Allow me to explain. So the Brett Domino Trio is a group that you might be familiar with if you've spent any time on the internet or indeed watching British comedy panel shows. And they're basically, they were originally a trio. There's now only two of them, but they still call themselves the Brett Domino Trio. And it's these two incredibly awkward, nerdy guys. I'll link to some of their stuff so you can check it out. Who do weird songs about things. And it's all like synth-based. And they're evidently they are incredibly musically talented. But it's got this kind of whole weird, awkward air of nerdiness about it. And social awkwardness and all that kind of stuff. And I find it very relatable, as I'm sure you can imagine. And they've put together this tour. So basically what they do is they do original songs around you know, various themes. They did like a spoof of an Ed Sheeran song and stuff like that. They've done a song about decathlon and all sorts of weird stuff. And they also do covers. I actually quite like their covers. There's a really great keytar cover of Purple Rain, which has an epic keytar solo in it. And there's quite a funny story in there about Brett, the lead singer's testicle surgery as well, which they cover in the cover in the movie. And they've done like a compilation of Ministry of Sound club bangers and stuff, which is a really funny, really awkward, but incredibly clever video. And my favourite one, which I think is their Christmas compilation, where they've just, you know, they do like 50 back-to-back Christmas songs, which is on regular rotation in our household at Christmas. And they've put together this movie that they've called Brettrospective, which is kind of a tongue-in-cheek kind of history thing. You know, I don't want to say Spinal Tap, but I suppose that's probably the most familiar thing that people might be familiar with. But yeah, it kind of covers some of their early songs, and it's kind of partly real, partly not. There's some kind of previously unseen live tour footage and stuff in there. Some really, really funny stories about some of the TV shows and stuff that they've done over the years, and the kind of weird appearances and how they've been completely unprepared for stuff. Like I say, it's quite difficult to tell what's real and what's part of the act, but it is brilliant. It was genuinely laugh out loud funny in this really cool little indie cinema in Birmingham. So if you get a chance to see this, and they're not playing in many places, but if you do get a chance to see this and you are familiar with the band, I can definitely recommend it. It is brilliant. And yeah, and then afterwards they did a Q&A, but they weren't in character for the Q&A, which was a bit jarring and a bit weird. They've actually, I noticed the other day, they posted on Instagram saying, by the way, the Q&A isn't in character. So I don't know if they've had some comments about this or what, but kind of seeing the guys behind the act was interesting, because they're kind of nothing like the way that they come across on TV and in their videos and stuff. And these are kind of like characters that they've created and stuff like that. But some really interesting questions from people about kind of the history of the band and their songwriting process and kind of all of that stuff. But definitely worth seeing. Of course, you get the chance to like meet them and stuff afterwards. I didn't, because I don't know why we didn't. But anyway, we had to get off and get some dinner and get the train home. But definitely recommended. And yeah, go and see it. Go and see it if you get the chance. Anyway, enough about me. I've spent the past few episodes talking about me. Let's do some news. I know a lot of you appreciate hearing my takes on the news, the retro news, and particularly stuff that's going on in the Atari world. And of course, if you are following that world, you'll know that there has been a big development this week. So let's go and check out my favourite retro gaming news website, timeextension.com. These guys should be sponsoring me by this point because I'm constantly shouting them out. But it's a great website. I wouldn't do it if it wasn't. And yeah, I'm very interested to see. Of course, the Atari 400 Mini was released this week, and the embargo, was it released this week or was it just sent out to reviewers this week? I don't know. It doesn't matter. But they've actually reviewed it. They've got a really good in-depth review. Of course, this was Atari working with the British company Retro Games Limited. Was it Retro Gaming Limited? I don't know. Like I say, I'm unprepared. And they're best known for some of their previous consoles, like they did a Mini Commodore VIC-20 and a Commodore 64, and they did the A500 Mini, which was a Mini Amiga 500, and they've probably done some other stuff as well. And I believe all these things run on kind of the same internal hardware platform, running on like an ARM-based SoC. And this is kind of their latest take on that, which is, of course, a Mini Atari 400. The keyboard, again, doesn't function like there are any other Mini systems, but you're not missing out on much because the Atari 400 keyboard was awful anyway, and I imagine a tiny version of it would be even worse. But of course, it's got USB. It's got four USB ports, so you can plug in your own USB keyboard and stuff if you want to, as well as USB controllers and whatnot. Comes with a really cool redesigned Atari CX40 joystick, and it's just a cute little thing, isn't it? It's just a very cool little thing. Loads of games pre-installed on there. And yeah, I will leave you to read the review. It's got 25 built-in games, so there's the list there. We've got Basketball, Asteroids, Centipede, Missile Command, blah, blah, blah. These were kind of worked out by various people in the community before it was all announced, but really good selection, really great selection of games. And of course, you can load up ROMs on a USB stick and run your own collection of games as well, which is fantastic. I was saying before that it's only a matter of time before this thing gets blown open and someone runs Doom on it. But for now, we'll focus on the Atari 8-bit games. It's got this really cool built-in menu system, of course, that has all kind of the story and the history behind the games, which is always good to see. And yeah, the whole thing just looks good. The reviews that I've seen, a few of them, obviously, Atari being Atari, they've sent a few out to some influencers, clueless influencers who don't have a clue what they're talking about and don't know anything about Atari history. Send them to me, please, Atari. I will do you a proper review. But also a few to people whose opinions I actually kind of respect and people who do know what they're talking about, which is always good to see. And Time Extension definitely falls into the latter of those two categories. So I'll link to that review if you want to see what this thing's all about, if you're interested in buying one. And they've also done, which is quite cool, and they always do this when they release these consoles. Now, I've actually, on this channel, I think I went through through one of their lists. I think it was the Atari 2600. It was the Atari 2600 and 7800 one. Obviously, the top 10 best games that you should play first on your Atari 400 Mini. And yeah, of course, as you would expect, some absolute classics in here. So we've got Miner 2049, our Mule, Berserk. Mule is a very interesting and unique game, and it's four player, so very, you know, well worth checking out. Berserk, of course, Battlezone. I mean, ask anyone for a top 10 list of Atari games, and these are all you know, incredibly strong contenders. So some great recommendations there, worth checking out if you have one of these things. Or even, you know, if you're looking for some games to check out on your kind of Mister or Raspberry Pi or emulation setup and you want to see what the Atari 8-bit's all about. One of my absolute favourite platforms of all time. And I think criminally underrated compared to stuff like the Commodore 64 and the Spectrum and things. You know, really, really capable system, the Atari 8-bit. So it's great to see them finally getting some love. And the other bit of news that I spotted on here for this week, let's sort of wrap this all up in one because I appreciate that time is ticking, is this new keyboard. I previously covered 8-bit do's, 8-bit do, I never know, NES-based keyboard or NES-based keyboard, which had that kind of that red, black and grey colour scheme of the Nintendo NES. And those two weird big buttons as well that came with it. I know a couple of people who've bought those and they're really happy with those. To be honest, I mean, I've never known them to make a bad bit of hardware, so it's quite an easy recommendation to make. And they've also, so they've just announced that they're doing one based on the Commodore 64, which is really cool. And I just love this thing. I love the colour scheme. I love the browns of the keys and, you know, all of that, browns and the greys. They've got all the colours spot on and the styling spot on. And it's just a nice thing. And it also comes with this joystick controller type thing. So kind of expanding on their NES offering. Obviously, that came with those two big buttons. But this comes with a control panel, as they call it, an independent control panel. And it's got the two large buttons, but it's also sprouted a joystick now. So it's got like the classic sort of Commodore type red joystick to go along with it. And that just looks like a really cool way to play. Like if you're playing on like Mister or something like that, this is a really cool and you know, authentic way, I guess, or as authentic as it gets without doing it on original hardware, to play your original Commodore 64 games. And I thought, you know, while we're giving the 8-bit some love, let's give the Commodore 64 some love as well, because that's something that doesn't really get that much, if any, coverage on my channel, although there will be some news on that at some point in the near future. And so it is time for my video of the week. I should mention, actually, last night I was here doing some filming, and I was here a bit later than I usually was. This is completely unrelated to anything, but hey, it wouldn't be a ramble if you didn't get a completely unrelated to anything aside, would it? And I was here last night, and I heard something that sounded really familiar. And I'd just finished filming for the day, and I was sorting all my footage out. I had absolutely loads of footage, and I was kind of sorting it all out on my laptop. And I heard it was bass, and it was coming from the office next door. And obviously, I play the bass. I've been in bands and stuff. I've talked about that quite a bit in the past. And it was the bass line. I couldn't quite work out what it was. It sounded so. And then all of a sudden, the penny dropped, and I realised it was a song called "Fake Tales of San Francisco" by the Arctic Monkeys. Now, if you don't know this song, it's a great song. It's one of their earlier ones, and it has a particular relevance for me because I actually used to cover it in a band that I used to be in. That band didn't really last very long, but one thing that I do remember, because I hadn't picked up a bass in years, and I was asked to join this band by my friend Sam, and asked to learn quite an odd selection of songs. We did like Sliver by Velvet Revolver. We did a Maroon 5 song, if you're familiar with Maroon 5, and we did a few others, but we did Fake Tales of San Francisco, which I hadn't heard before, and I actually really like it. It's a really great song. Big fan of kind of the early Arctic Monkeys stuff. And yeah, I was sat here last night, and I was like, that's that song that I used to play in my old band. And I popped out, and I kind of stuck my head around the corner. And it turns out that the owner of the business next door is in a band, and they actually sometimes practice here. And for some reason, our paths just hadn't crossed up until this point. And they were really good. They were covering, like, you know, Foo Fighters and, you know, other kind of, you know, big kind of rock stuff. And yeah, really good band. So really cool. But yes, anyway, on that whole note and talking about music and about bands and about covers and all that kind of thing, and also tying into an earlier story from the ramble. I mean, it's almost like I planned this, but yeah, my video of the week this week is this one. And you've probably seen it before. If you haven't seen it before, you should definitely check it out. And this is Brett Domino's Ministry of Sound medley. So nothing here to do with retro computing or anything like that. Obviously, always a bit of a mixed bag with the video of the week. And it's these two incredibly awkward guys with a big pile of electronic instruments, as well as a kazoo and a ukulele, a guitar, and all these weird things, playing a medley of club classics. Of course, I'm a big rock guy, as I've mentioned. I've been in you know, various bands and stuff, but I like all sorts of music. I genuinely like a bit of everything, and I grew up with this kind of stuff, and there's just some brilliant kind of 90s and early 2000s club classics in here. So yeah, on this sunny Easter weekend, put this on, crank up the volume, and revel in the incredibly awkward but incredibly musically talented performance of these club bangers. Anyway, thus concludes my weekly selection of nonsense and news and behind-the-scenes information all about my YouTube channel. Thank you ever so much for joining me once more, and I hope you're enjoying your Easter weekend in the sun. I hope it's sunny. It was sunny when I first started recording this, but it's actually raining now. So there you go. That's the British weather for you. But of course, it's a bank holiday as well, so of course it's going to rain. But we're probably going to persevere and have a barbecue anyway, because that's what we do, because we're British, innit? Anyway, thank you ever so much for listening. I'm really keen to get on with this other video now. So that's what I'm going to go and do. And yeah, thank you ever so much. Thank you. Thank you. I mean, over 500 of you listening to these every single week. I do really appreciate it. And it's really motivating. And I do really enjoy coming in, you know, on Fridays and sitting down and recording these. So I'm glad that you appreciate them and enjoy listening to them. So thank you ever so much. Thank you. I appreciate that I've said thank you about 600 times now. So I'll leave you to it. Bye.